Hello and welcome to Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Finsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. This episode is part of a new series exploring sustainability and fashion, created in partnership with Ralph Lauren. Throughout this series, we're inviting key leaders, academics, creatives, and entrepreneurs to share their stories and views on the challenges and opportunities of today's fashion industry. We'll look at how brands, influencers, and media can pull together to deliver much-needed positive change and explore the collaborations and innovations shaping a more sustainable future. This series is designed by Design the Change, Ralph Lauren's global strategic roadmap to create timeless style, protect the environment, and champion better lives in line with the G7 Fashion Pact and the United Nations Global Compact. My guest today is Peter Semple, Chief Marketing Officer at Depop, the fashion marketplace app with a cult Gen Z following and 20 million users worldwide. Before joining Depop, Peter spent 7 years leading product and marketing innovation projects at Google's Creative Lab in New York and London, working across existing Google products and emerging technologies. Prior to that, he worked in creative agencies on big consumer brands, including Converse, Nike, O2, and Coca-Cola. Outside of his professional career, Peter has launched some personal fashion projects and is obsessive about music, technology, design, youth culture, and sneakers. He's collected them for over 20 years. He lives in London with his wife, two children, and his dog, Midnight. Peter, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
So nice to talk at this moment in history, one I think that we'll all look back on, in the midst of the coronavirus crisis, as we all are in London, and use this moment to sort of step back from the immediacy of the crisis and the multiple tragedies that it's entailed. And think a little bit about the future of fashion. I'm certain that when we all return to normality, some norms will begin to shift in how we consume and how we think about purchasing and how we think about fashion. And so I want to sort of start by kind of going to the heart of really your business model at Depop. The rental and secondhand apparel market is expected to grow 1.5 times the size of fast fashion by 2028. This is according to a report by ThredUp. And what do you think is behind this growth?
So, yeah, I mean, I Depop is this secondhand, primarily secondhand clothing resale platform, and driven by an enormous and very young audience largely. And so I think, you know, it's interesting because this sort of the secondhand apparel market is exactly what we do and think about every day. And the sort of, I think the things that drive it and that drive us as a business are, you know, this, the shift in consumer mindset around sustainability, understanding of it, sort of affinity towards it, and desire to find better alternatives to buying new or buying wasteful or buying things that have a sort of negative impact on the planet. So I think part of it is this consumer mindset, and I'll talk about that for a second. Then I think the other bit is actually the role that technology has played in access, education, all the rest of it. So I think on the consumer mindset side, you've sort of seen this enormous rise in awareness, and the last 2 years have seen it explode even more so on a global stage of awareness and understanding around the impact our choices and consumption habits have on the world. And fashion, which is the business that we're in, lots of sort of evidence of the issues that the fashion industry of old has had and its relationship with the environment. And that's especially that awareness and kind of activist spirit and desire for something better is particularly pronounced amongst a new audience, a young audience who are sort of growing up, seeing the challenges and sort of educated on those challenges in a way that some of the rest of us weren't necessarily when we were younger. So, you know, we sort of see that, you know, Gen Z that we speak to a lot, and primarily, you know, 77% of them say that when they're thinking about products, they think about what choices will allow them to kind of avoid waste. And so things like the resale market in fashion, things like the secondhand apparel market, rental, those are all better alternatives than buying new. And so you sort of see that increased awareness, and then you get this sort of the technology effect of, one, it was sort of technology and access that allowed everyone to become more educated about these things and more aware of them. But then it allows these kind of mindsets and these intentions, and these good intentions across communities to sort of proliferate, because people can speak and people can present the choices they've made and people can present the options they've found and kind of further educate and further kind of inspire people to do more. So I think, you know, this enormous rise we see in the scale of the rental and secondhand apparel market, it's sort of on a tear, and it should only continue to get bigger. And that should actually ultimately be a positive story for the fashion industry and its relationship with the world and its impact on the world.
So I think one of the great decisions when you're establishing a brand or a platform such as Bepop is whether you lead with purpose or mission. In your case, sustainability, vintage, the circular economy, or whether you try and make your endeavor cool and desirable and aspirational. And so I guess what I wanted to ask you is, what do you lead with first? How do you sequence those two imperatives? And how do you hold them in tension with each other, but also promote both equally as you sought to build out this extraordinary platform?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a brilliant question. And it is, as you sort of laid up, it is a bit of both, really. I mean, it is the education and the awareness and the desire to do better and to have a better impact on the world around us is certainly part of it. But actually, you need to continue to motivate people by presenting things as exciting, better alternatives as well. So I think, and I'm sort of a big believer on the brand side and on the, when you're trying to do good and provoke people into action, it's easier to provoke them into action by showing them an exciting alternative rather than sort of goading them or guilting them into making a decision. So I think part of the thing that Depop has done so well over the years, and it's partly come from us as a business and as marketeers, but it's also sort of partly come in the most wonderful way from this organic young community of creators and creatives, is they have presented, and we have presented, secondhand fashion as aspirational, stylish, interesting, individual, creative, and sort of given it a lease of life and an excitement that, you know, makes it at least a viable option to new fashion and often an exciting and better alternative. I mean, I think it's, you know, the wonder about the vintage sort of market is you don't just unlock ideally less waste and less kind of impact on the environment, but you can vintage is arguably better by being individual, by being rare, by genuinely being a thing that no one else has got, because you have the one version of that jacket from 1994 that still happens to be in circulation and no one else has it. Or, you know, there's wonderful stories of people, pieces of clothing that have lived through, you know, band t-shirts and all of those sort of things are very good examples of, they're attached to cultural moments. So there's lots and lots of ways that vintage fashion is actually imbued with value that perhaps new fashion doesn't have. And we sort of see it from a kind of brand building perspective, but also, as I say, it's a thing the community do themselves and champion themselves, is highlighting all of those positive aspects of secondhand fashion. And so that means that it becomes kind of a compelling total argument that you can have something that no one else has, that has this cultural resonance, that has an interesting backstory, that's nicely worn in, and it's also good and a better alternative for the world, if that makes sense.
So I want to ask you a question about the relationship between community and commerce. if I think about it from the perspective of the conduit, we have a private members club in a 40,000 square foot building with 3,600 members. And we try and serve them with things that will add meaning to their lives. Extraordinary content about how to change the world, a platform to allow people to invest in each other's businesses, wonderful food, interesting entertainment. And what we're attempting to do is give people things of meaning, but more importantly, to build a true sense of community identity. So that when people walk through the door, they say, I'm a member of the conduit, and that means something, that stands for something. And people derive value from that sense of being part of the community. So I want to ask you that question in relation to BPOP. Obviously, you do commerce on your platform, but you're also trying to create that sense of community where people transact, they interact. And in some ways, the brand that you have, you devolve down to them and allow them to curate that sense of community in their own terms. So tell us about your thoughts, commerce, community, how they relate to each other.
It's entirely right. I mean, I think I sort of look at all of these things in, there's wonderful judgment calls that are made along the way. And then there's sort of some of the cultural forces at play around us that have allowed Depop to succeed. And I think the bits that, you know, the founder from the very outset and then various of us who've been part of the journey ever since, it's, you know, partly observing some of these things in the world and then trying to figure out how you can kind of foster them and then seeing where the community takes it, learning from that and then building thereon. So it's sort of, it's a constant kind of progression and education for us as well and sort of learning from this consumer. But, you know, your point about the kind of curation and kind of giving power back, I think one of the things that we talk a lot about empowering this next generation to change fashion. Like, that's fundamentally what we sort of believe in doing as a business, because we are actually a very easy to access fashion platform. So sort of anyone can set up a store and begin buying and selling very quickly. And that's great because there's a sort of inherent, you can, you know, casual sellers and buyers can kind of buy something, sell something, make a bit of money, reinvest it, all the rest of it. So there's sort of there's an ease and a simplicity of this sort of democratized access to buying and selling fashion. But some of the sort of superstars on the platform are the people who effectively have the creative talent of incredible taste. And they're the ones who are, you know, they're almost stylists. They're the ones who actually are thrifting and doing vintage shopping from various places and doing lots of sourcing. And then they bring those things together and the power of their brand or personality or the way they style it, because lots of people photograph themselves styling the garments on the platform. It's their kind of curatorial creativity that actually makes the things more exciting. So that's another way actually that, you know, the community itself is kind of embedding more meaning into these kind of vintage products by presenting them in a new light. You're entirely right. You know, we sort of, from the outset, Simon, who is the founder, he founded Depop as a marketplace for, with a community at the heart of it from the very beginning, because he actually ran a magazine, a culture magazine in Milan where he lived. And as a result, he knew lots of interesting people and he'd meet interesting creatives and interview for the magazine and all the rest of it. And his initial idea was to build this marketplace for this quite interesting and diverse group of people he knew, who both were making stuff that they could sell, but also had a lot of stuff that they would want to sell on and that other people could find value in, because they were all interesting, kind of creative people with really interesting taste. So he sort of built this thing from the ground up with a social community at heart. And because he chose those people to kind of bring in at the very beginning, and they were inherently social people with their own communities and their own followings, they then brought in their own communities, who then brought in more communities, who sort of have grown into this sort of 20 million strong community that we see today. And as I say, you know, along the journey of Depop over the years, we sort of try and provoke and foster where we can and support community and support the superstars who we see on the rise and these interesting aspects of creativity. And then we watch and we listen and we learn from the community about what they need and what we can do to help them go further. So the kind of the destiny we're on and hopefully the kind of ultimate impact and legacy we can have around changing sort of consumption tastes or consumption around fashion, it's partly driven by us and then partly driven by the community and then partly driven by us again. And we're ideally sort of working together to sort of change things and reshape things.
So we've spoken about new upstart insurgent brands and platforms and how they take on board sustainability and how they build up venturing into the vintage space, the circular economy. But how do you do that if you're a giant, well-established brand like Ralph Lauren? How do you get brands like that to embrace the spirit of vintage? And what does that look like?
Well, I mean, I'll talk a bit about Ralph Lauren because I think they're a particularly interesting example of it, where they, you know, fundamentally for decades have made clothes that have been of lasting quality. So that's a good start because there's so much wonderful Ralph Lauren inventory still around that still has sort of value today. And because they made it well in the first place, and that's an incredible accolade to them. I think another really exciting part of the Ralph Lauren thing, which when we started talking last year, why it all sort of made sense, is that so much of what Ralph Lauren as a person, as a brand, they've done over the years, so much of that is influential in the fashion of today. So actually for Gen Z, you know, these enormous brands that have sort of risen over the last, well, you know, 20 plus years, the Supremes of the world that have changed the way people view fashion and consume fashion, the rise of streetwear, so much of actually the kind of codes and aesthetics of those brands is referential back to Ralph Lauren, which I just find fascinating. I mean, I'm a real nerd for that stuff anyway, but you know, the sort of creative director who was at Supreme for more than 10 years through his massive, massive explosion in popularity was, you know, and has spoken about it often, incredibly inspired by Ralph Lauren and referential to Ralph Lauren. And he's gone on to do another incredible brand called Noah, which definitely borrows from the codes of Ralph Lauren. So I think with Ralph Lauren, you have this, you know, the aspect of they made great clothes in the first place that have still lasted. They've also made styles that have lasted and that continue to be inspirational. So that puts them in a really interesting position. And then I think what they've decided to do over the years, which is brilliant, is they're truly committed to understanding their impact on the world, not just in terms of fostering secondhand and vintage, but in lots and lots of other ways, they're considering their impact on the world and trying to do good things. And I think that commitment is very clear from them, and it's a really important part of engaging with these new methods of consumption and definitely with these new audiences, that actually transparency and authenticity really, really do go a long way. I mean, we all know that to be true anyway, but especially with this new audience, it's very clear when brands are doing something that's cynical, maybe too harsh, but they're doing it to serve an audience versus doing it because they fundamentally think it's the right thing to do. So Ralph Lauren has a wonderful kind of collection of attributes that makes it quite unique in this space. But sort of broadly speaking, you know, I think lots and lots of brands in a good way are, like the rest of us, becoming more educated about their impact and the need for them to make changes. And so lots of them are exploring lots of ways in which they can reduce their impact and do positive things and invest in positive ways. And I think that, as I say, authenticity and commitment is a really important part of it. I think, you know, there's always going to be the tension of these brands that still have to sell new stuff and still make stuff. And I think they have a lot to do on how they make those things in the most responsible way possible. But it's amazing to see, you know, the Ralph Lauren example of part of the partnership we did last year, but lots of other brands as well, doing things that actually, you know, first and foremost, acknowledging that there's value in the vintage market and being excited by that, and actually finding ways to kind of present vintage as an alternative or presenting it alongside the new and old, so that they're sort of starting to provoke some of these kind of new consumption behaviors themselves. So I think you see with the Ralph Lauren thing, but as I say, you see with some other brands as well, that they're sourcing old fashion themselves and they're actually breathing new life into old garments by representing them in physical retail or doing things like we did with Ralph Lauren of actually curating and selling a collection of sort of resourced vintage stock, you know, you see lots of other great brands around the world. You know, Patagonia is a very obvious example that invest in rebuilding and kind of reworking products. So as products have been worn out over the years, unsurprisingly, they'll fix them and kind of remaster them to give them extended life. So I think there are sort of lots and lots of ways that brands are kind of exploring how to support this new vintage and secondhand and general kind of affinity towards less wasteful fashion. And I think the best ones are the ones that do it because they believe it's the right thing to do and find an interesting way to do it, basically.
So tell us about the specifics of your partnership with Ralph Lauren. How did it come about? How did it work? What did it look like? I'm interested in hearing the texture and the details of what you actually did together.
Yeah, sure thing. I mean, as I said, so, you know, we began talking quite organically and, you know, we both had, both as organizations had sort of similar interests in finding ways to kind of engage this new audience. And that's obviously where we have some expertise. And also just finding ways to kind of champion not just the Ralph Lauren vintage story, but the bigger story of embracing secondhand. And the way we chose to do it with the Ralph Lauren thing was, you know, for us, we're this sort of community first platform. So when we talk to incredible brand partners like the Ralph Laurens of the world, we always come to them with a, well, how do we do this in a way, or what could we do that will also champion the people at the heart of the Depop community? Because they're the real heroes and they're the ones who drive the wonderful community. And, you know, we see our role in the Depop business as sort of supporting them. So what we came up with was actually sort of celebrating the creativity inherent with sourcing this old fashion. Like, it is kind of amazing that, yes, there are lots and lots of these garments still in circulation in the world, but knowing where to find them and knowing how to find them and knowing which country to look for and, or to look for them in, and then sort of knowing how to kind of represent them in a kind of interesting way that gives them modern relevance and resonance. Like, that's really creative. And so what we did was sort of search through the Depop community online and actually see who was selling lots of Ralph Lauren and see who was finding interesting things. We reached out to a few different sellers on the Depop platform and sort of established a relationship with them and then asked them to go and source a collection that obviously Ralph Lauren had a bunch of input in terms of the types of things they wanted to kind of uncover and rediscover. And so these sort of, you know, Depop sellers and sourcers went and found a collection of Ralph Lauren vintage stuff from very sort of high-end apex products, sort of, you know, overcoats and more expensive end, to much more accessible end of a baseball cap or a polo shirt. Or so we had this sort of broad variety of things that represented the breadth of Ralph Lauren output over the years, and could be styled in lots and lots of ways by this young community. And so they sort of sourced a collection, and then we sort of did a special launch of that collection and made it accessible for purchase through the Depop app. So sort of gave it presence on the homepage of the Depop app and championed the stories and the products these sellers were able to find. Then we actually presented it in the new Bond Street flagship store, the European flagship store, and this sort of beautiful presentation that was a sort of design collaboration between Ralph Lauren's team and our team to sort of find a way of bringing our two worlds together and sort of embracing the kind of legacy and the importance of Ralph Lauren and the way it's built itself as a brand. But they sort of, in a really wonderful way, opened the doors for us. And so we were able to come in and showcase product in a way that felt true to us as well as them, and put on an interesting kind of launch event with really interesting kind of musicians and an interesting guest list that you probably wouldn't find at Ralph Lauren events of old. But it actually felt like a very natural kind of bringing together of the world they have and this sort of iconic building and this iconic structure. And then they sort of let the kids in, which was amazing.
So, Peter, there's this wonderful tactile quality to fashion when you're going through a rack and you're running your thumb and your forefinger over a fabric or you're trying something on. There's a physicality to fashion. Mm. How do you replicate that so successfully as you've done in the digital world?
So, I mean, I think it is, it's definitely a sort of a challenge. And, you know, there is, as you say, kind of real magic in, I think, the art of discovery and sort of thumbing your way through a rack and then being able to kind of obviously feel the material is the point you're making. And I think some of that, it isn't possible, unfortunately, to replicate through the digital world. But, I mean, I think on the discovery part of it, we, on the Depop side, we, you know, we actually make discovery very easy and we give you free reign of however you search and what you look for. But then we also try and present things along the way that you might be interested in. So you, there is that aspect of the excitement of stumbling across something. I think you can replicate that digitally. The kind of the touch and the feel of the garments thing, that's the bit that obviously we can't really do. But I think there are sort of interesting ways you can sort of get around it. One of which is making sure that the photography, the description of those items is as useful as possible, so people kind of know what they're buying into. But I think in place of being able to kind of feel the material itself, I think one of the things that sort of the Depop community does well and that we sort of foster and encourage people to do and teach people to do is the way they style it. So you lose the tactility piece, but you sort of get a kind of exciting real world presentation of what the thing could look like, how you might wear it. And actually some of the best Depop sellers style themselves in multiple different ways with the same item. So you sort of get a sense of what it would look like in this light with this type of outfit put together this way. So you get a feel, I think, for how the garment works and what it would feel like in a sort of inverted commas way, even though you can't touch the garment. But ultimately, we also still try and do things to actually allow people to shop physically and kind of trying to find these sort of ways of bringing physical and digital together. So the Ralph Lauren experience in New Bond Street is one of them. We actually took over a space in Selfridges for 3 months where we sort of presented inventory that rotated in and out every couple of weeks from new sellers across the platform. So we sort of tried to find, we do a number of little pop-up experiences that we run. And actually in the US, we have a physical retail space, sort of like a showroom, a small one in downtown New York and one in Los Angeles, because there will always be a magic of walking in somewhere and touching a thing and discovering it. So we try and find ways of sort of doing both, because you can't do it all digitally, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So what role do you think technology plays or could play in creating a truly sustainable fashion industry? I think we're all at this moment where COVID is causing us to reimagine consumerism. Perhaps we are certainly experiencing the delights of online and delivery and e-commerce in ways that have only accentuated a pre-existing trend. But you know, being in essence at the intersection of fashion and tech, in what other ways do you think tech could accelerate or assist a move towards more sustainable practices in the industry?
Yeah, I think there's, I mean, I think, you know, we've talked a bit about kind of access and education and the role that technology plays in that, and the fact that people can actually discover and buy these things in ways they couldn't do previously thanks to technology. But I think then you see lots of other sort of interesting sparks of technology driving more sustainable fashion on the production side. And, you know, there's incredible softwares out there about sort of sampling and building models of clothing so that you can sort of digitally replicate the sample process that used to be, you know, you'd design a thing, you'd send it off, the fabric would be produced, a sample would be produced, it would be sent back, then you'd mark up the thing and send it back. Like, you can actually reduce a lot of those waste cycles by there's various new technologies that allow designers to kind of design in 3D and even down to some of the detail of how particular fabrics might drape or might act. So you can sort of, that's an interesting way in which technology is sort of helping fashion. I think there are other, you know, there's a really interesting business that called Unmade, which is looking at using technology and combining technology and software with old production processes and old kind of production machinery, so that clothing could sort of be made to order in a way that was never really possible before. And so they, I think that's another fascinating business that I think we'll sort of see grow quite a lot, because they're beginning to facilitate ordering and production for various brands of different scales, some of which are very big brands, so that there's no waste, so retailers or local markets can know exactly what they want to purchase and buy exactly that quantity of stock without having to buy excess or create excess that then goes on to be wasted. So I think there's sort of all of these really interesting kind of inklings of technology helping the supply chain. And I think that's something for Depop. We're sort of excited along the way of, in addition to presenting a place where people can sell secondhand, and that's the big scale of positive impact I think we're having on consumption behavior. You know, people will always want to be creative and people will always want to make new stuff. So how can we as Depop, what tools can we leverage at the moment or build in the future or partner with these other companies out there to sort of give our community the ways in which they can create new fashion sustainably? So I think that there's so much interesting stuff out there. And I think your point about COVID and the sort of strange situation we find ourselves in now is that lots and lots of companies will now be thinking about what they do digitally when they can't rely on physical retail or physical supply chain. And I think across the next year, we're going to see a lot of disruption in the fashion industry because of supply chain issues, because of COVID. So I think, you know, in an interesting way, one benefit of this strange experience we're going through is it might provoke a bunch more innovation of how you solve for these things when physicality isn't a possibility.
Let me ask you a core, what used to be a core mantra of fashion marketing was the runway show. And, you know, having built a brand myself and having had a show in the Grand Palais in Paris and seeing the amount of time and energy and effort and money it takes to walk, 42 people down a runway in 8.5 minutes.
Yeah.
I wonder whether this is not a form of marketing that is ripe for radical reinvention / deconstruction, which is the kind of physical runway show.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, and you'll obviously know this very well, but you've obviously seen over the last, I guess, 5 to 10 years, various people opting out of that cycle because of the expense, presumably, first and foremost, and the difficulty of pulling those things off, and then the competitive nature of them, and, you know, all of the things that sort of come with the scheduling of a fashion week. And I think more and more of those people over the years will have been making those decisions based on lessening their impact and lessening the kind of waste and consumption that goes on around those shows. But I think, again, you see all of these interesting examples popping up, and many of them on the fringes of brands that have never relied on that infrastructure. So, I mean, I use Supreme as an interesting one just because, I've sort of loved that brand for a very long time. But, you know, they built a new method of launching and driving consumption and driving kind of desire for clothing, which is now sort of propagated into the world of this sort of drop culture thing. Like at 11 o'clock on a Thursday morning, new stuff will come out and you'll never see that stuff again. And so they sort of hacked a way of driving interest and driving kind of massive desire at moments and massive attention without ever having to physically present anything. And I think, you know, you look at, I don't know, it's a few years old now, but, you know, Virgil Abloh, who's obviously become this incredible icon and has sort of broken down so many barriers in fashion. You know, the first, after he did the Bin Trill sort of collaborative project that he did, the first sort of, his first fashion presentation was this thing called Pyrex. And the kind of fashion show for it was actually a video art piece with a friend of his and an artist in New York called Jim Joe. And they just presented a bunch of people wearing the clothing while the piece of art was happening in a locker room. And that in itself, that's a fashion show of sorts, but with a lot less kind of infrastructure and need and presumably a lot less expense than sort of putting on an actual fashion show. And then, of course, you see the Burberry's of the world and various new means of using kind of digital media and digital technology to show it. So I think, you know, there are lots of, what's wonderful is, you know, there's fashion is such a creative industry. So there are so many of these people, some of them very established and who've sort of lived through the eras and now want to reinvent it. And some of them are kids or, you know, kind of opportunistic, idealistic young folk who just come in and have a different idea about how you can do stuff. And I think the more of these interesting examples we see going on to be successes, Virgil probably a very unique example of building from relatively small base to enormous global success. But all of those things existing in the world then inspire the next bunch of those things existing in the world. And I said, that's what I love about this generation, is they're reshaping everything. And they're actually, once they've reshaped it once, they then reshape it again 3 minutes later or 3 months later or whatever it is. So I think we'll just continue seeing these newer and different ways of people presenting fashion. And a lot of them don't have to be reliant on the physicality or the difficulty or the kind of logistics of putting on the Fashion Week show.
So I want to ask you a question about community versus commerce. And, you know, we spend a ton of time at the Conduit thinking about how you build a community of people who are passionate about social change. And one of the tremendous values that people derive from our membership, I think, is the sense that you're not just there in a kind of transactional sense to say, who's a person who can give you an idea, who's a person who can finance your next startup, how do you access extraordinary content, how do you have a lovely meal. But there's something more meta than that, which is a sense that you have a sense of identity, that you belong to a community, that walking through the door is as much a statement about an orientation to the world as it is, you know, a membership to a club.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that you spend a lot of time thinking about commerce and community and their complex interaction at the heart of Depop. So tell us about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think fundamentally, you're right, you know, you're right. And the way you describe the community aspect, which where there's a value exchange and sort of this sort of reciprocity of stuff that people probably hope for when they walk into and when they become a member of your club, but also the community is based on some sort of foundational principles of kind of shared and common values. And I think some of this is, you know, it's sort of hard to break down scientifically. Some of it is sort of the secret source of what we were talking about a bit earlier around authenticity and actually having kind of purpose and meaning and staying true and being clear about who you are and what's meaningful to you. So, I mean, I think we think about it kind of simply at Depop where, you know, we, as I say, Simon began this thing for a certain type of creative community. And I think, you know, I can accredit, he's done lots and lots of brilliant inspirational things along the way, but I think picking young, sociable, creative people as your audience from the outset, I think is this sort of stroke of genius that Simon had, because it's then they brought in more and more young, creative, social people and more young, creative, social people, and the thing has sort of exploded partly of its own volition. And as I say, then our role simply becomes fostering it and pushing it in the right direction and supporting it when it needs support. So I think at, you know, at Depop, we sort of have this internal mantra, which is, you know, the community comes first and we succeed when they succeed. And for us, the interesting thing on the commerce point is that it's not just philosophically nice to say that we succeed when they succeed and therefore we should do everything in support of them. For us, it's actually genuinely also commercially true, because Depop makes money when people sell stuff. Like, we take 10% cut of the sale price. So actually, we can genuinely, and that's why I love the company and one of the reasons I sort of joined, we can genuinely consider that every marketing dollar we invest should actually be about helping the kids succeed and helping their brand succeed and helping them reach a new audience and helping them sell quicker. And if we help them succeed, that's how we also make money. So we sort of look at it in a relatively organic way of actually constantly being in contact with what's happening in the community, both physically. We have a bunch of people who are actually kind of community partnerships, community experience, talking and listening and learning from all of these things that are happening. And then we actually employ some technology, obviously, to understand trends and what's emerging in the community. And we sort of do a little bit of fostering creativity and dealing with and working with nice people and interesting people because it's interesting, and that itself has a value, and that drives visibility and awareness and brand and all the rest of it. And then there are some things that we can sort of learn as we look at from the breadth of the community and things that are being searched for and trends that are emerging. And we can actually feed some of that sort of data-driven stuff back into the selling community so that when they go out and source for their next batch of inventory, they're buying stuff that is likely to be met with demand. So as I say, it's sort of a nice, like, wonderful, simple thing for us that supporting the community is actually also how we make money. And the two things are kind of wonderfully intertwined. And I sort of love that, you know, we can invest money on the marketing side or invest time on the product experience and technology side in just helping cool, interesting, young, creative people do cool, interesting, creative stuff. And that's also how we make money, which is great.
So your kind of collaboration with Ralph Lauren is a example of Depop collaborating with a very big and established brand with a very strong history and legacy and brand code. Are there other examples where you sort of facilitated more horizontal brand collaborations between people in your space in a way where you kind of played a matchmaker role rather than being a protagonist yourself?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, on the Ralph Lauren thing, as I said, it's sort of that example, the people we wanted to hero were sort of the creators within the Depop community. And if you, there's a film actually that we made with Ralph Lauren at the time about the sourcing journey these people are going on. And it's very much like you get to know them by their name and what their background is. And there's sort of this wonderful sort of the hero protagonist in the kind of Ralph Lauren Depop collaboration was a chap called Adam, who's actually a stonemason by trade, but sort of has no fashion background or fashion education, but loves fashion, has always collected Ralph Lauren, partly for personal use and then partly for sort of the secondhand market and selling things on. And he sort of tells this wonderful story of how, you know, he was literally on a building site, and then someone on my team called him and said, "Hey, do you want to come and do this thing? And we know you're a big Ralph Lauren expert, and we'd love to partner you with Ralph Lauren, the brand." And his sort of whole world exploded because he was suddenly, you know, several weeks after being on a building site, he's then actually dealing directly with this brand that he sort of loved and that's inspired him his entire life. So I think we always try and make it actually about the people. Like the thing when we did the Selfridges physical retail bit, it was a Depop space, and we'd sort of taken over the space for 3 months. But when you walked into that space, the posters on the wall were the faces and the stories of the people you were buying from. And actually the tags on the garments had the people and their stories. So you actually began a relationship ideally with those people. And we sort of switched them out, as I said, every kind of 1 or 2 weeks. So every time you went in there, you discover new people, as it were. We also have some sort of stuff happening this year on the sort of more creative side of things. So we've done lots and lots, and we'll continue to do much, much more of the kind of representation of these collections of vintage clothing, secondhand clothing, and championing that. We're also trying to find ways, you know, some of these young creatives who are on our platform and who are doing amazing stuff on our platform, we can help them collaborate with brands to create product. And obviously, as we do that, we then want to find the most sustainable way that they will create new product. But giving them a platform for creativity and kind of introducing some of these conversations, that's a role we see we can play. And we see, you know, one, we actually get a great deal of satisfaction out of helping these young creatives take a step up in their careers. But two, also, again, their success ultimately, hopefully, brings more people into our community and then helps drive everything that makes Depop so magical. So there's a couple of things you'll see in the next couple of months that are products created in partnership with a young creative and an existing brand. And in fact, one of those things was supposed to come out a few weeks ago, but of course has been put on pause because of all of this sort of stuff. So we see the collaboration thing with brands, you know, there's almost infinite possibility of how that thing can work. But what we always want to make sure we do is champion these actual people at the heart of it. So you leave not just knowing Depop, which is beneficial, of course, to us, but you leave knowing these individuals and knowing what makes them tick and what makes them interesting examples of creativity in this new generation.
So Peter, you've been at the heart of building and what is a quite remarkable and successful brand and community in the fashion space in the form of Depop. What advice would you give to aspirant brand builders out there who are, wanting to build their own fashion company at this moment in history? Just this can obviously be a hour-long essay, but sort of a few crisp pieces of advice from a person who's done, built a very successful career in the space.
Yeah. Well, I think that first of all, I should probably qualify that the brand and, as I say, the success of Depop is a sort of combination of many, many people who've sort of gone into it. So I definitely can't take all the credit for it. But I think in answer to the question, it's sort of for people wanting to build brands and build kind of impactful and meaningful brands in this new world and have a positive social impact. I think, one of the amazing things that we've obviously talked about a bunch in this hour is the access to education that technology allows. So there's so much interesting research and interesting learning, both on the kind of academic side of impact you can have, or the logistical side, or the technical side of creation. And then there's so much creative inspiration fodder out there. So I guess I'd start with the advice, which is probably true of every walk in life, of do a bunch of research and learn and understand what's happening in the world and get inspired by lots and lots of things. And then try and find a sort of interesting, ownable point of view of how you can make something that's built off all of the good stuff that's happening in the world, but is something that's true and authentic to you, so that as you build it and project it, it's not a facade. It's actually just something that comes naturally to you. And I mean, I think I said it somewhere else in this hour, where I'm a really big believer from a brand perspective that, one, it's easier to show people something exciting and get people excited and encourage them to follow you that way than force them to do a thing. So I think kind of presenting something exciting and interesting and presenting, in this case, social impact or better environmental consumption as something aspirational and, as I say, really interesting is a better way than going down the kind of more harsh goading route. And then I sort of, I think it's ultimately important in fashion that it's a genuinely creative thing, and at its best, it brings entertainment, it brings joy, and people should sort of be having fun. So I think those combinations of, as I say, learning as much as you possibly can, educating yourself, having a point of view that's true of you, and then trying to make it kind of constantly creative and fun. And I guess the last thing, which I sort of have thought about, and I think I've been lucky enough to learn through my entire career of building brands, is that I sort of, where I've got to in my career at this point, I'm very much a believer in the fact that a brand is always work in progress. Like, there's never an end point to brand building, because audiences change, cultural factors change around you, consumption habits change, technology changes, all of those sort of things. So once you've set off on this path of who you want to be and the impact you want to have, you then also need to keep learning and keep reinventing and keep evolving. And ideally, you stay very true to some of the things that made you you in the first place, but you find new ways to express that version of you based on what's happening in the world around you. And, you're constantly building and evolving and changing and experimenting, and some things will work and some things won't work, but you just sort of keep pushing things forward.
I think that's a remarkable note to end what has been a fascinating conversation. I'm enormously grateful for your time, and congratulations both on the wonderful brand and community you've built, but also by extension, the positive impact that community is having on the fashion industry and on the world. So thank you for joining me.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for inviting me on. And this has been a really fascinating conversation. And as I say, I'm sort of so excited to be part of this conversation and try and figure out how Depop can kind of continue to have a positive impact and champion these creative communities at the heart of who we are as a brand, and ultimately they're the heroes who will go on to reshape and change everything for the good.
Wonderful. Thank you for listening to Conduit Conversations. Feel free to subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. For more information on Ralph Lauren's Sustainability Charter or on Ralph Lauren's Design for Change program, visit ralphlauren.com or corporate.ralphlauren.com. And for more information on The Conduit and our community of changemakers, please visit theconduit.com.